Blog Talk Radio.
Jesus, Father.
Welcome live on The Woman at the Well via Tribe Family Channel. I am Beverly Black, and I am the creator of The Woman at the Well live on Tribe Family Channel. It is an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to be back on the air. Now, I want to first preface the show by speaking of the vision for The Woman at the Well, which was given to me back in, I want to say, 2017. I am familiar with John 4, The Woman at the Well, the story of The Woman at the Well. And for me, I went through a journey in which God was trying to speak to me and get my attention and get me by myself. But I had so much activity going on that I thought the enemy was disturbing me. And so I'm in battle. Okay, you messing with the wrong one, I'll loose them and bind them in my mind, in my spiritual walk. And I am getting my tail tore up literally day in, day out. It's just not going smooth, and I just don't know what is going on. And I'm calling upon the Lord, and my spirit quieted, and all the noise around me went silent, and God said, "The woman at the well." I said, "Lord, that's been you all this time that I've been getting my plateau up." Oh, my goodness. So I haven't had five men, and the sixth was not mine, as in the story in John 4 of the woman at the well. But I do believe that as a woman who doesn't mind going to the well to testify my sins, to be healed, as a woman, I know that there are parties that are missing from that well and that conversation, and that is the men. The men. So let's have the conversations. Welcome to Confessions of Me Too Moments, hosted by Beverly Black on The Woman at the Well. This is season 7. This is season 7. I have had so many people come to the well and share their points of view, messages, spiritual awakenings, and they have been very transparent. There have been overcomers, advocates, people that have fought against violence and sexual assault. There has been Tuskegee Red Tails Airman Colonel Richard Tolliver, whom I opened the show with the first season. His book, Woman, A Godly Creation, paints a whole different story than the woman in John 4. Woman, A Godly Creation talks about the beauty and the inspiration of being the birth of creation. So we are going to enter into this conversation from a spiritual position. Today's guest speaker, I'm honored to say, is also the sponsor of today's show. And she is bringing us back on the air. Her name is Kamala L. Ward. She's an advocate against violence and sexual assault. She is a clinician, a keynote speaker, a CEO, and a founder. She has titles that she can explain to you for herself, that baton in which she is carrying. So live on The Woman at the Well on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly Black, I welcome Kamala L. Ward. Good afternoon, Queen. How are you?
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for the opportunity to share with your great listening audience. I want to pause and say peace and blessings, grace and peace, and I am honored, humbled, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to be here, to be present, and also to be available. We salute and honor you as the host and the visionary behind this great, great vision, this great ministry. So I'm grateful, and I greet you with a queen's greeting. So thank you.
I embrace your greeting, Queen, and I tip my crown right back to your crown. Peace and blessings be unto you. And before we get started, as godly women, as queens, as stewards of creation and humanity, let's give a moment of silence for all the violence around the world. It's a hard conversation to have. Many have come to the well. The road to healing is paved with reflection. You may not remember the day it happened. You may not recall the time. You just know how it made you feel. Your Me Too moment changed everything. But you don't have to feel alone. Come to the well and speak your truth. Share your Me Too moment, your strength, and courage will help others. We have clinicians, advocates, pastors, ladies, people that advocate against violence and sexual assault, as does this Queen Sister Pamela today. So, Queen, we're going to give the floor to you. And please let our listening audience know where and when did you get the vision to start your ministry and your advocacy against violence and sexual assault.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Ms. Black. Again, listening audience, I want to thank you for taking out the time to join us, and I would especially like to extend my prayers and thoughts and also commitment to being an activist and mobilizing thoughts surrounding those who are grappling with violence and sexual assault. It all began in Mississippi, where I was raised by my maternal grandparents, coming from a home that was very focused on pastoral community, legacy driven, and committed to everyone becoming the best that they can be. A very structured home environment, but also a very strict environment. I didn't understand that strictness at the time, but having some of my relatives who were survivors of violence and who had moved away from home and then returned home with their children did not understand the dynamics at the time, because growing up in that environment, raised by my grandparents, conversation amongst the youth was limited, if at all. But I did know that there was something that was going on, and my aunt, my mother's youngest sister, had experienced violence in her marriage. So home was a safe haven. Being the product of five generations of preachers, I am the first female seminarian in my family, but not the first female voice. Being able to identify this violence, always a writer, and being very curious, a strategic thinker at asking why, why is it that this particular relative is home? And we laughed, we talked, and we would converse over dinner, and in the South we call it supper, but this public secret never came up. And then as I matured, I being a survivor of sexual assault, did not understand how being quiet silenced my pain. That silence, pain, and trauma did not go away. It was compartmentalized. So my love for journaling and my love for writing, I was able to express thought through writing. So this journey began when I was little, when I was younger, and it began to escalate because the older I came in age, the more I encountered others who had this public secret. So in being in a community, not in a rural community, but being in a pastoral community where everyone knows everyone's name, everyone is familiar, everyone's laughing, but you can see the dysfunctions. They are public, but they were never discussed. I wrote about them. I always wanted to write and always wanted to have answers. That can also lead to trouble because culturally you're raised in an environment where children are to be seen and not heard. Nevertheless, my uncles and who were present at that time encouraged my writing. And then I became a community advocate, grew up in the church, doing missionary work, but grew up in the community as well because I am not religious. I have a relationship. So that relationship that strengthened my faith also compelled me to mobilize those persons who were around me and get some answers. And thus began my journey.
Wow, wow. Now, if your 25-year-old self could reach back in time and mentor your 5-year-old self, what words would you tell her to hold for dear life?
I don't know. That's a great question. Thank you. I don't know if I would say the words to hold for dear life, but I would tell her to, at five, it was beautiful because there was a lot of things that were taking place that I did not necessarily know. I did not know the impact. My mother was very sick, lost my parents at a very early age. But I would tell that five-year-old girl, I would tell that young five-year-old, write, and everything is going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay.
Okay. Now, in growing up with your grandparents in Mississippi, what type of mantras would you say? Now, I know that growing up, yes, I remember the saying, children are to be seen and not heard, but we also heard our elders speak a lot of wisdom and carry mantras through the generations that were threads, if you will, to keep the family strong, the fabric of the family strong. So what type of mantras or principles would you have been imparted to live by, passed down through the family?
I want to thank you so much for that question. I want to clarify, being raised in a strict environment did not mean that there was no happiness and no love. It's just that when you are, you know, you're in a certain era where Prince is popular and you have to go to revival, normally, you know, that's not the normal thing. My grandparents were their greatest mantra, their greatest principle that impacted my life was their example. They were not grandparents who were so heavenly minded that they were not earthly good. I am a product of sharecroppers and educators and also critical thinkers. They were balanced, and you know, they were people of influence. My great-grandfather was the first to earn his doctorate in that town. My grandfather's father was a professor. And even for those who were domestic workers, they were not domestic workers because they could not do any better. They did it as a sacrifice. My grandmother being the oldest of 14 children, it was a sacrifice that was made on behalf of the family. So those principles, the mantras that are embedded in my mind were, one, remember who you are and remember whose you are. Mm-hmm. And the other mantra that would come to mind is my grandfather and my grandmother would always say, be grateful for everything. always remember to say thank you. And because my grandfather was a minister, very involved in the National Baptist Convention, he would say, don't be glad twice. Don't make people glad twice, brother. Don't let them be glad to see you come and glad to see you go. And my grandmother, who taught me how to be a lady, and my grandfather taught me how to be a leader. I appreciate and respect men because of the example my grandfather was. And he not only provided for his family, but he protected his family and he covered his family. He was not just an example in the community, but charity, and this is one of the greatest mantras that I've learned from them, charity begins at home and spreads abroad. That's the principles that they taught. Don't look down on anybody unless you're picking them up. So there are many, Miss Black.
You know what, Beverly, please. But yes, I can appreciate good down home raising, fear of God, charity to mankind, fellowship, and not to say that love was amiss in the family, but just to say that there were those times, like you mentioned, when they said children are to be seen and not heard. And this is indicative of children not being allowed to bombard conversations that are being held by adults. That's why you saw a small table where the children ate in some households, and that's why you see in some ministries you'll have where the children all sit together and the adults all sit together, and there's a time and place for everything. So I want our listeners to have a rice understanding of Pamela L. Ward. So I'm going to go through your bio, but I wanted first and foremost for them to know who you are in your own words, from your own mouth. And then my next question will be based upon something that I see in your bio. So Pamela L. Ward, if you're just now tuning in to Confessions of Me Too Moments, live on Tribe Family Channels, The Woman at the Well, I am Beverly Black, and my guest today is Pamela L. Ward. Pamela L. Ward has served as a human service professional for nearly 20 years as an advocate and activist, for marginalized communities. She has received numerous awards, proclamations, and citations for serving women, girls, and their families surviving violence, sexual assault, and the criminal justice system. The Reverend Pamela L. Ward, a fifth-generation preacher, began serving in ministry at an early age under the tutelage of her maternal grandparents. She served as her grandfather's secretary and assisted her grandmother, who served as the president of the Missionary Society of the Mount Olivet District in the National Baptist Convention and Baptist Training Union as an accompanist, composer, psalmist, junior missionary, and playwright. Ward was licensed into Christian ministry in the African Methodist Episcopal Church in 1996 by the late presiding elder William Lee Freeman, while serving under the leadership of the late Reverend Maud L. York. Ordained into ministry in 2009 as founding pastor and church planter by her apostolic covering, Apostle of Kentu, and Dr. Rosalind Phillips. She organized the Grace Alive International Christian Fellowship in 2011. Grace Alive is a purpose-centered fellowship for survivors with a call into the pastorate. She has planted Grace Alive New York, Grace Alive Georgia, and Grace Alive Pakistan. We are talking to a global pastor. In 1999, Reverend Pam organized Redeemed Outreach Ministries, a faith-based nonprofit whose mission is to enhance the self-worth and quality of life of women and girls. Now, I'm going to stop right here. The rest of this amazing bio from Reverend Pamela L. Ward will be on our page, The Woman at the Well, via Facebook. But, Reverend, I would like to ask you, what gave you the ultimate vision for your faith-based nonprofit, and what are the qualities that goes into enhancing and building the self-worth of the life of the women and girls you serve?
The first question was, what gave me the vision?
Yes, for starting
there was a need, you know, there was a need. And as a problem solver, I believe that not just as a minister, before being an ordained or licensed minister, I am a woman. Ministry is what I do. Being a woman is who I am. And when there is a need as a problem solver, if you are committed to your assignment, the objective is to be able to address that need. My goal was never to change the world, but carpet the universe where I walked and be able to offer that self-worth and healing, because I too was wounded. In his book, In Renewing, he proposes, you know, with wounded healer, we become healers as we serve those who have challenges with that which we suffer with. And I'm paraphrasing. So the need, the vision came from a God-given need, something that I was looking for after being violated. You know, who can speak my language and who can communicate with me clearly with the tone and with the tune in which I can understand? So my faith is undaunted, but as a woman, as a lady, how can I be able to offer what my faith has inspired me to be able to do, go beyond just the faith community, to pursue a higher education, to learn about what I'm grappling with so that I do not carry this? And that's what Jesus did in the book of John, chapter number 4, when he met that Samaritan woman. That Samaritan woman was snubbed because of her gender and because of her race. We don't even know her name, you know. And I'm not trying to preach a sermon, but what
see,
was
you
done, the Creator made contact with her. So in order to be able to fulfill the mission, I have to make contact. And you cannot reach people. Theodore Roosevelt said this, and we talked about it. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So you cannot exhibit care if there is nothing relatable. So being able to serve survivors of violence, those who are formerly incarcerated and those who are surviving and, you know, overcoming sexual assault, I'm able to understand because I'm speaking their language. I don't have to go into detail.
And Reverend Pamela Ward,
Pamela, please.
You hit me in my chest when you said, you already preaching. She said, now I'm not trying to preach this, and I was just getting ready to say preach.
No,
that's why I had to chuckle, because
This is a sister talk, right? I want to elaborate on this briefly. Can I go there? I want to interject this because I just discerned that whoever it is that's listening, if we're making a change in the life of one person, not just the female, but also a male, because we're committed to the family, and I'm very adamant about being being intentional and not dismissing what my grandmother and grandfather did for us, family. They established memories and they established a legacy. So when Jesus, you know, encountered this nameless woman who was being snubbed and discriminated against, who went to the well, for those of you who are listening, those in your listening audience, male or female, I appreciate his approach. I appreciate Yahshua's approach because he just stuck with the key issues. He was not trying to highlight her dysfunction. And you ask, you know, how is it that I'm able to reach people? It's by the grace of God. And when you are operating in your assignment as you are, as the creative director of this great empire that God has given you, when you operate in your lane and you're committed to your assignment, you have no rivals. You don't have to fight to get things done. So you're able to not only reach people where they are, but you listen to them and you allow them to have their say. So being at that well is an indication that there was something missing that she needed. You don't just go to the well. I'm from the country, so I'm Southern. So I met some people up South who are country. But I value where I'm from, and I appreciate where I'm from. So going to the well is an indication that there's something dry in me. There's something in me that is missing, and I need to be able to have myself aggregated. I need a reliable source. I cannot survive or thrive any longer. And what I love about a well, Beverly, is it's groundwater. So God will reach way down. He will reach way down. It takes, my grandmother used and grandfather used to tell me about what they had to go through to get water. And they said, before Pamela, I can get any water out of the pump, I had to pry the pump. And prying the pump, we don't give up on people when they don't respond the way we want them to respond. That's what God does. He has the propensity to see the diamond in the rough. And if we are representatives, it's not about preaching a sermon. It's sometimes just being quiet long enough to recognize and relate to someone's tears going down their eyes and not asking why are you crying, but just handing them a tissue. So this is how we serve. We go into the shelters. This is how we serve. We're able to meet someone at Walmart, and this is how we serve. And I'm very adamant about policy change. I'm not looking at a candidate. I look at how they vote. How do you vote? And how does your voting record affect me and my family and the people that we serve? Because honestly, Beverly, it's not about how high we jump. It's about how straight we walk.
Well, now, I can't unpack that. That's why you're Reverend Pamela L. Ward. But I can tell you this. You hit so many points in so many ways. But what I love about you and what I can relate the most about you and your ministry and your work is when you said you're a woman. Now, you can feel the infirmity of another person's heart. It is on a humanitarian level. It's not about the titles. It's not about the degrees. It's not about whatever seminaries or how many stages. It's about being able to feel the infirmity of a person's heart. You said something about I can't even go back to that, but it reminded me of our steps being ordered, and following that assignment. When you know what the assignment is, when you trust God because he's not going to give it to you if you won't have the capacity of succeeding with it, because God is in it. He is there. You're not operating in your own strength. And I appreciate that you can hear and feel and touch humanity just by not having your head buried in the sand, but being able to hear a person's cry if they're not even making a sound. Like you said, that tear flowing down a person's face, handing them the tissue was your communication, because you saw the tear and you understood. And sometimes people just need you to be there and be quiet and let them get it out. You're a writer. Some people like to convey in different ways, but just being there for each other from a humanitarian standpoint is first and foremost our greatest assignment, because we're to love each other as what?
Nope.
As God so loved us.
Absolutely.
Okay? As God so loved us.
Absolutely.
So
I want to pause and also salute the men. We also work with men who are survivors of violence, sexual assault, and who are formerly incarcerated
Indeed.
And put into the system, because there is power in family. The Bible tells us where there is unity, there is strength. So being able to be, and I cannot be someone who's evasive and dismissive, because Beverly Black, it wasn't too long ago I was at the well, where I too needed a visit. And I understand that a visitation at the well, the benefit, but being at the right well, you know, this woman was sitting on the well that Jacob built. So I, being at the right well, being raised by my grandparents, whom I may not have understood everything, but they spoke over our lives, not just my grandparents and my ancestors and your ancestors, but our ancestors as a community, as a people, where they would speak into the atmosphere. God, don't let Beverly and Pamela go through what I'm going through. But they endured it so that we can be able to have this moment. You can be able to have your show. You can have as many degrees as a thermometer. That's irrelevant. Because when people are hungry and people are cold, they don't care. It's not even about a degree. And I want to encourage someone who feels like they're too old to go back and get it. Go back and get it. Because once you earn it, it's only going to have the date of the graduation. It's not going to have the date that how many years it took for you to get it. It's going to have the graduation date. So there are benefits for us being at the well. The title of your show, The Woman at the Well, there are benefits. And being at the right well, being at this well today, the listeners understand that they have the opportunity to be able to change their environment, because they're sitting at the well. They're sitting at the feet of a host who is committed to the community, committed to advancing the lives of those people who have been overlooked and misunderstood, because violence is colorless. Pain is colorless. Hurt is colorless. And I can improve my health if I'm drinking the right well water. I have better taste in water. I can taste the zinc. I can taste the minerals. And if you're so accustomed to contaminated water, when you drink that well water the first time, you may get sick, because what God is doing is gully washing you, getting stuff out of you that needs to go. So it's not about titles. Titles belong on cans. You know, I too have struggled, but that doesn't make my faith undaunted. I was able to make it because of my faith. And I too am human. There are no big eyes or little U's.
Amen, amen, amen. And I can so appreciate what you are conveying to our audience. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are just tuning in, we are live on Tribe Family Channel, The Woman at the Well, Confessions of Me Too Moments, hosted by Beverly Black, and my guest speaker is Reverend Pamela L. Ward. She is an advocate against violence and sexual assault, a clinician, a keynote speaker, a CEO, and founder. And we certainly appreciate your presence and your words of faith and your words of wisdom. You said so much. There's just so much to it. I appreciate being able to be the host of The Woman at the Well. I appreciate being able to draw from the strength of people like yourself coming to the well. I appreciate the strength that God has placed down inside me to go forward with the vision. Like I said earlier, it was a fight getting to the well. I was going through it, and I was literally getting my tail tore up every day, and it lasted for at least a week. Nothing was going right. Everything was, you know, like you said, when it's God, it's going to go smooth, paraphrasing. But that week, nothing I was trying to do was going smooth until I just, you know, on the verge of collapse, everything had to stop. And when I stopped being so busy trying to push my agenda, that's when the birth of The Woman at the Well came forth. And I have had people come on this show that have gone through a lot in life. Like you said, you have been through some things. I, too, have been through some things. And this is where we can be transparent and feel safe and talk about these things which we have gone through, and oftentimes at the mercy of people that we trusted to love and protect us. At present, sexual assaults are the most prevalent crimes in the U.S., yet also the most underreported. Over the last two decades, much work has been dedicated to change the landscape of sexual assault and to empower victims of this type of crime. But the thing is, despite several helpful progressive reforms, sexual assault statistics reflect that many crimes are still not fully addressed or understood, which is why it is important that we analyze and address the strengths and weaknesses of the current approach with the help of the latest sexual harassment statistics in order to understand what needs improving, and where. With that said, we're going to dive into a few alarming statistics, and then I'm going to also post this on the Woman at the Well's page, where I just posted Reverend Pamela L. Ward's complete bio for your reading indulgence. Alarming sexual violence statistics, and this is by the Editor's Choice. One of the most shocking facts about sexual assault is that approximately only 5% of sexual assault reports filed have been proven false. 82% of all juvenile sexual assault victims are female. 90% of adult rape victims are female. 41%, let me back up. 90% of adult rape victims are female. So by virtue of the process of deduction, that leaves 10% being male. 41% of sexual assaults against Native Americans are committed by a stranger. Adolescents aged between 14 and 17 were by far the most likely to be sexually victimized. Nearly one in six, 16.3%, was sexually victimized in the past year. And general statistics about sexual assault, over 600,000 women in the last 3 years annually. So we're going back to 2019, over 652,676 women were raped. Over 40% of the women in the United States have encountered sexual violence. And nearly 80% of female sexual assault victims experience their first assault before the age of 25. So now I'm going to go back to the question. If your 25-year-old self could reach back in time and mentor your 5-year-old self, what words would you tell her to hold on for dear life in the scheme of the message that I just conveyed?
I would tell that 5-year-old to speak up. Although I wasn't that age, I would tell that 5-year-old, because at 5 years old, I was very, very curious, that 5-year-old to speak up. I thank you for that statistical information. And every 68 seconds, an American is sexually assaulted. We're not talking worldwide, globally, the African diaspora. Every 68 seconds. And in many instances, those who are sexually assaulted are also victims of incest. So we're focusing on a study, doing research on that as well, particularly in the Black community, because it's a public secret. It's a public secret. And our men, there are many men who have been sexually assaulted. Ike Turner was sexually assaulted by a
You cut off. He was sexually assaulted by who?
A woman. A woman at a very early age.
Oh, I see.
So I'm that's the clinician kicking in, where we look at certain behaviors, and this is not to discredit Mr. Turner, he's no longer here, cannot speak for himself, but I'm saying we look at behaviors and we do not question the root cause of it. And in her book, Terry Williams talks about Black pain, talks about depression, talks about certain behaviors, because professionally, not only is she a publicist, a social worker as well. So when we begin to look at certain behaviors, as opposed to, and this has nothing to do with Mr. Turner, I'm saying in general, to label and criminalize people, there's a root cause to everything. That's my point.
I can appreciate. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and as a person of faith, having an opportunity to be able to share the gospel, which is good news, I believe that this is why our ministry services are virtual, and this is not against anyone who has a building. I think that's applaudable. But it's very important that we recognize and accept and also remember the words of Dr. King. He said, well, whatever it is that you could do, you do it well. When you do that well, no matter what it is, you understand, accept, and you move forward knowing that wherever you plant your feet, that's a pulpit. You're changing lives. You're not just, we're not dooming people to hell. We have to be able to empower our communities. The Black Lives Matters movement is the only movement that wasn't birthed out of the church. This is not one versus the other. I'm saying faith and community together, not religion, as faith leaders, being able to sit down and speak to an imam, speak with a rabbi, speak to a sheikh, sit down and understand that we have a responsibility to meet at the well, because our cups are empty as well. And you cannot feed or leave from an empty
cup. And I have to interject in what you are saying. I am hearing, in all you're getting, get an understanding. And you cannot get an understanding if all voices are not allowed to the table.
Absolutely.
You are bringing a good word This is Manna, ladies and gentlemen, from Reverend Pamela L. Ward. When we are transparent and when we are in a safe space where it's non-judgmental and we are speaking our truth, therein lies the right conditions to be able to forge change and healing. So I invite anyone to come to the well. Replenish yourselves. This is not for the faint at heart. This is for those that are ready to walk in the true reality that are on manna. Because I say this because there's a certain level of maturity in which the well is able to be receptive to. Because I am not a therapist or a clinician. So you can come to the well and you can dump it all out, but I'm saying that there is a line to it where if you are seeking help in regards to reporting any sexual violence and assault, please go to the proper authorities. If you are self-medicating and healing in a sense where you're using your creativity, your writing, like Pamela here expresses that writing she did, she would have told her 5-year-old self to write. Then she would have told her 5-year-old self to speak up and out. So I am saying and echoing Pam's message. Writing is therapy. Get it out. Don't hold it in. Do with it what you feel is the safe thing for you to do for yourselves. But we can no longer afford to be silent. We have people that are silent victims and silent soldiers. We have people that are silent observers. They say if you see something, say something. And with all of the statistics that I previously read, there should be more of us sounding the alarms because we're seeing something and not saying anything. Now, Reverend Pamela L. Ward, I'm going to give you some time to give us additional remarks. I have a couple of more statistics that I'm going to say because, of course, we are dealing with sexual violence and assault. And what I did is when I posted this show, today's show, on one of the forums, it actually encrypted the word sexual and the word assault. Now, that's the problem, okay? Everything has to be politically composed in a way to where it does not offend people who aren't experiencing the problem, I would ascertain. For those who are experiencing the problems, I would also ascertain that if they cannot speak up, I would hope that they would appreciate those that are speaking up on their behalf. And to be encrypted and have words just simply blotted out because it's not mainstream material, these are mainstream problems. But it's not allowed in mainstream media or mediums, and that's complicit with the problem. So I appreciate being able to pull up other information, and here I'm going to say this quickly. In 2019, again, I said that over 652 women were raped. The figure excludes non-rape sexual assaults but includes date rape statistics. It excludes non-rape sexual assaults, but it does include date rape statistics, which is a whole new level of raping people. All right, so let's go over number two. Over 40% of women in the U.S. have encountered sexual violence. Nearly 80% of female sexual assault victims experience their first assault before the age of 25. Nearly 80% of female sexual assault victims experience their first assault before the age of 20. I'm sorry. The screen moved. Around 20% of American males have been the victim of sexual violence. So when you were talking about Ike Turner, you were speaking in terms of, and rest in peace, Ike Turner, but you were speaking, to my understanding, in terms of his experience being acted out in his experience. Hurt people hurt people. If hurt people would matriculate the healing process towards their healing to where they're no longer hurting, then the numbers are going to go down by virtue of what? They're no longer hurting. They're no longer part of the demographics of hurt people hurting people. That's too immeasurable. So we're responsible for our own healing. If it's journaling, if it's a clinician, as Reverend Pamela L. Ward here on this show, if it's looking for therapy in all the right places, if it's being able to break a statistical cycle that's either in your family or in your community. And one thing that you said, Pamela, you said something about, I'm paraphrasing, but it's out, you're putting it in the context of the secret being out in the open. It's a known secret,
yeah,
if you will.
Yes, it's a public secret, and I also want to reiterate.
Secret. Well, wait, let me, before you go there, I just wanted to grab that from you, if I may, because I'm going to give you plenty of time. But like you're saying, it's a public secret, meaning that it's all out in the open, and yet the silence outweighs the secret. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in environments, people can only do what they know, and as opposed to it being us being responsible for our healing, sometimes you, and culturally, therapy is shunned upon. And as
mm-hmm.
a faith, I am also speaking to listeners who may have been violated by people of faith, leaders of faith, people who misuse their position in church, in a synagogue, in a mosque, where, you know, in the community. So I am committed to community, and being committed to community means that I'm looking at Matthew 22, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy mind, thy soul, and love thy neighbor as thyself. And you have people wanting to do the work and offer healing to others, and they don't love themselves. So I would propose do the work, because I, having a passion, and I remember, I'm not old, but I remember having the passion to do the work, but because I lacked experience, including, you know, you can be educated. There are some things that you can gain life one-on-one that you cannot get in a book. You have those resources and the tools, but my point is you can't offer what you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot
mm-hmm.
offer what you don't have. So in community, it begins at home, being able to create an environment where people are comfortable enough
mm-hmm.
to discuss, disclose. And then also With regard to the perpetrator, more than likely that person has been violated and has been silent. So how do we address this? For those,
how do we break the cycle?
Yes, how do? But we have to be able to address it. It starts with truth.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with truth coming out of denial. For those who are listening, and like myself, I'm not just a survivor. I'm an overcomer of sexual assault. If you need help, I am going to share with you, help is available. We have the National Sexual Assault Hotline where there are professionals that are available. That number is 1-800-656-4673, 1-800-656-4673. And then in your local communities, Google is a great tool where you can be able to connect with someone who's relatable. There are resources. There are environments. There are resources. There are systems that are in place that you can report to. But then there are some systems that are in place that protect the perpetrator. So we want to be able to have a plan of action where we're living in an environment now where we're going to have to, just as they are having shooting drills, I believe that we should have survivor drills, where we begin to teach our young girls and our young boys the importance of communication, the value of your body, being able to take care of yourself. This is not permitted. That is not permitted. And I also believe for those who do know, we have to step up and not criticize, not judge, not point your finger at people and remember and forget the other fingers that are pointing back at you. Big Mama is no longer 65. Bernie Mac said that. Big Mama 33 now. So
and
we can't laugh at the
day.
People who, yeah, so people, we can't laugh at our community. We're either part of the problem, Elbridge Cleaver said, or part of the solution. So if we're going to be
Amen.
Part of the solution, being able to offer that level of wisdom that we gain from the porch, sitting around the tree, talking to each other at barbecues, and not having a me, myself, and I mentality. If you know that there's someone in your community, you can't save the whole world, but you can carpet the universe where you are. If there's not a father figure or a lady figure, because there's a difference between just a woman and a lady. I thank God that I'm a lady. When people know better, they do better. I thank you for this opportunity, Beverly Black. It's been an honor, and I'm very, very grateful.
I thank you. I thank you so much. I'm just listening and soaking in everything that you're saying. You could have gone on and on and on. I am just absorbing your wisdom, your compassion for the work that you're doing. You can hear it in your spirit, how you're exuding love for the community, and that is what we need. So where can people find you if they want to connect with your level of advocacy or want to consult or even have you come to a conference to be their keynote speaker? Because you have a real word of healing, understanding, wisdom, and action in your advocacy, and this is just what the world needs. Ladies and gentlemen, Reverend Pamela L. Ward, before we sign off, GumbleForTheSoulInternational.com for our calls for submissions, GumbleForTheSoulInternational@gmail.com, Facebook.com/TribeFamilyChannel, Twitter @TribeFamilyUS. I am Beverly Black. Reverend Pamela L. Ward, thank you for sponsoring and bringing us to the well. It was refreshing. I feel a sense of replenishment. And I would like for you to have the last words before we listen to Wounded Heart by Jeffrey McKinney. You want to hear this. The final words will go to Reverend Pamela L. Ward.
Thank you so much, Ms. Black, Beverly Black, it's been a great pleasure. Listening audience, I am humbled and honored for this opportunity, and I also would like to thank the producers for their technical assistance in this process. I can be reached via email, pastorgracealive@gmail.com. That is pastorgracealive@gmail.com. And if you reference Beverly Black, Woman at the Well, then we can be able to move forward. Not only am I open and receptive, but we are community. Let's open and receptive to be able to provide assistance if I can. And if I can't, I will refer. I will provide referrals. But it's been an honor, and it's been a distinct pleasure. As we prepare to leave this line, but not the presence of God and the presence of each other, I just want to encourage you that even if no one knows your name, even if you have not been recognized and you feel like your voice is not heard, I want you to understand that rejection by some people is a compliment. I do not want you to suffer in silence. God doesn't want you to suffer in silence. Jah doesn't want you to suffer in silence. Yahweh doesn't want you to suffer in silence. Allah doesn't want you to suffer in silence. You have a right to your voice. I thank you for the opportunity to be able to not only be in contact with you, but I implore you to make sure that when you're at the well, that you accept the brave and startling truth that well water is different from regular water. You are a city that sits on the hill. You have the right. You have the right. You have the right to be where you are and show up and allow God to show out, because your voice matters. We are each other's keeper. Thank you, and God bless you.
the pain in your history. So
Tribe Family Channel, Tribe Family Channel, oh.